Introduce yourself, please.
Representative Joe Domagoa. I represent the 39th District in the House of Representatives in Jefferson City.
Great. Let's get started.
This is State House Blend. I'm Sam Zeh.
And I'm Brian Ellison. We're using coffee
and donuts
to better understand the legislatures on both sides of the state line,
the issues and the people in Topeka
and Jeff City. Here we go. Yes, welcome to our second Missouri side edition of State House Blend. We've been covering the Kansas legislature for the better part of this year, but now we're bringing you what's going on in Jeff City, and glad we have the opportunity to meet Joe Domagoa, get to know him a little bit better. We'll be back to Kansas next week, by the way, and Sam Zeh will be back here to host that program. I want to welcome my guests. In addition to Joe Don, we've got Arlie Hoskin. She's a blogger and a mental health advocate. She lives in the north part of Kansas City. Welcome to you, Arlie.
Hey, welcome.
Glad you're here. And Mike McGraw with KCPT, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist in the journalist seat at the table today. Welcome, Mike.
Good to be here. Thanks.
Glad you're here. So, Joe Don, we always start the same way. We want to get to know you by getting to know your family. Tell us about your kids and your pets.
I would be remiss without saying my wife, Cassie.
That's probably a good choice.
She's better half. And I have a four-year-old, Norcate, who will be five in October, and Vivian, who is two, and she'll be three coming up in August. So, and then we've got a cat, which was premarital property.
Of yours or your wife's?
My wife's.
Okay.
And we have a dog, Ellie.
All right. You have joint custody.
Yes. That was an anniversary gift before we had kids.
Very good. And the other question we always like to start with for you, Joe Don, is how did you get involved in politics in the first place?
My mom has been county clerk in Carroll County since I was 10. So I got bit by the political bug fairly early, helping her. Any good candidate has their kids out there knocking doors and stuffing envelopes. And then after that, I was an intern in Jefferson City for my local state rep, John Quinn from Chillicothe, which led me out to D.C. where I interned for Kenny Holsoff for a summer. Came back and worked on a political campaign up in northeast Missouri, which led me to work in the Missouri Senate. And then I went to law school. And with the redistricting, my House seat there was no incumbent, so I jumped in the race,
and here
the rest
you are.
Is history.
And just the 39th district, you're from Carrollton.
Right.
You represent pretty several counties, right?
I've got most of Ray except Lawson, all of Carroll and northern Sheraton. So I basically have all the population centers, if you can call them that, in Sheraton County, but I do share some of that with another state rep.
Very good. Well, we've got lots to talk about today. We've got stories in the news about the state house atmosphere there in Jeff City. Got questions about the legislative session that ended a couple months ago now. But first, let's go around the table and let our guests set the tone. Our citizen at the table is Arlie Hoskin. Arlie, what would you say or ask of our guest, Joe Domagoa?
Well, I'm curious, when I've heard in the news talk about, Ferguson initiated legislation, it's primarily been around things like body cameras. And I haven't heard much talk about the systemic injustices that may contribute to some of the racial tensions. Do you think that any of those will be addressed via policy?
Jodan, you're the vice chair of the Judiciary Committee, right?
I am.
So,
yeah, we didn't want to have a per se Ferguson agenda last year, but I think some of those issues, like you talked about, are still there and need to be met head on, and I think we'll continue to do that, like you said, body cameras, some of those things. But for me, and we've talked about this before we're on air, especially about the unaccredited school districts in St. Louis, we've worked, there's been a lot of bipartisan work on trying to come up with a solution to get those kids a world-class education. The governor's vetoed the last two bills, the last two sessions. So those are issues that are still on the table that we need to work on. We know there are some problems there in St. Louis that the legislature can never fix. We'd like to fix them, but as far as broken families and generational poverty, some of those things, we could legislate it to death. But we can work on, and I think it's our duty to work on the educational system in St. Louis to give those kids the opportunity that they need to have. So those are things we're going to continue to work on. And if you want to call that Ferguson-related or just St. Louis-related, I like to look at it as statewide. It's something that's a priority for, I think, everybody, even a rural legislator like me.
Very good. Thanks for that. So, Mike McGraw, you have been following a lot of issues that the Missouri legislature is facing.
Yes, I have been. And Joe Don, you used the word intern a couple of minutes ago.
Right.
And so I've got to ask you, you know, if you look at the media representation of Jeff City, there's intern gate, there's limitless campaign contributions.
Right.
The media would have us believe that Jeff City is corrupt almost in biblical proportions.
Right.
Do you think the state legislature has got a bad rap, or does a lot need to be done?
Well, I first want to say, I think it's maybe blown a little bit out of proportion, but I think that there's a perception problem, and I think our constituents are looking to us to clean up our acts in Jefferson City, and that's what I want to go to Jefferson City and do. You know, we had an ethics reform bill, a House version last year. There was a Senate version. Caleb Rowden sits right in front of me on the House floor. He carried the House ethics bill. That bill went to conference, and he had the conference committee report on his desk with House signatures on it for 2 weeks. Now, the Senate broke down and because of right to work, and they called the previous question. So, you know, whether or not that could have gotten worked out, I'm not sure. But there is an effort to clean up Jefferson City. The intern questions, you know, I think there something needs to be done. And Speaker Richardson and Representative Engler are working on a committee right now, kind of a working group to work with colleges and universities. Because as I told you, I was an intern in Jefferson City. It helped me immensely. And we want young people to come to Jefferson City, feel comfortable, learn something, and not be preyed upon, for lack of a better term. So that's what we need to do.
Some of those stories that Mike's talking about refer to a whole atmosphere, a whole culture in Jefferson
right.
City, partly because it's a remote location. People are far away from their constituencies, but also just something that seems to be passed down generation to generation
right.
among legislators, where it's okay to treat women in particular, young women in particular,
right.
In a different way. Have you observed that yourself?
I haven't observed it myself. And I think, you know, the two stories, you know, it was more like they were preyed upon, you know, by text messages and after hours events. So it wasn't like we saw that. It wasn't something that was out there in the open. But I think a lot of times, like in any company, a lot of it needs to be policed within the organization. I think we need to do a better job as with our colleagues to police each other. You know, I mean, that's not acceptable behavior for a major corporation. And it's definitely not acceptable behavior for someone who's been elected by their constituents to act like that in Jefferson City. I mean, we all go down there to represent our districts, to represent the people who put us in office. They didn't send us down there to act in that manner. So a lot of it needs to be policed ourselves, and we want to create an atmosphere where if an intern has these type of problems, they can come forward and tell somebody. And I think that's kind of what they're working on, you know, kind of the comfort zone for those folks. So it's something we need to fix, and I suspect that we'll work hard on it next year to make sure it happens.
So do you think there's a culture of harassment?
You know, it's hard to say. For me in Jefferson City, when I was an intern, I never, of course, me being a male, I never felt like I was harassed or anything. Anybody said anything to me that made me uncomfortable. Even if that happens one time, that's too many. So whether I'm going to say it's a culture, one time's too many. We need to stop it and make sure it never happens again.
Fair enough. I guess I want to ask you about an area that I know is dear to you. Earlier this year, the Missouri Cattlemen's Association gave you their Legislator of the Year Award. And
right.
They noted that maybe your knowing your way around a farm had something to do with that.
Right.
You grew up on a farm that raised cattle, right?
I did.
So my question is, has your confidence around large, stubborn beasts proven helpful in Jefferson City?
Yeah, it has. I guess I'm unlike some people who are in Jefferson City. You know, I basically grew up in Carrollton. I went off for about a decade and then came back and represent my area. So I'm vocal about my support of small towns and what I call rural sustainability. But the things I learned growing up on a farm and growing up in 4-H and FFA as a young person, whether it be hard work, just the small things like that. I think, yeah, that definitely helps me in Jefferson City. And I kind of have a working knowledge about what we talk about in Jefferson City. And I think that's why we have a citizen legislature. You know, when most people find out I'm an attorney in a small town and I've got this farm background, they look at me kind of odd. They cock their eyebrow and say, well, that's unique. So, yeah, it's helped. And I'm on the Ag Committee in the House, so it's fun to work on those issues.
Mike McGraw, you've covered agricultural issues quite a bit. What do you see as one of the things that Joe Don and his work and the Agriculture Committee needs to be thinking about?
Well, one of the things I want to ask about is there's a national debate right now going on having to do with the meat industry, and it has to do with country of origin labeling, Joe Don. And you talked about small towns and sustainability. Mm-hmm. One of the issues that some farmers talk about a lot is foreign competition, especially right. when it comes to meat animals. Now we're in this position where we have a law in this country called country of origin labeling. Some packages of meat in the grocery store can list as many as 13 different countries that meat comes from. And I see a division among farmers over this international trade issue.
Right.
And we've gotten sideways with the World Trade Agreement on this issue. Where are you on country of origin labeling?
You know,
which way should we lean?
It's not an issue that I'm probably as well-versed as I need to be because it just hasn't really come across our table. But I think what we need to do is make sure we're still the leader in the world market so we can make sure our meat can be sold not only in your local store, grown locally and sold there, but it can be shipped to Japan. It can be shipped to China. So, and I know there, you know, we talk about GMOs. We talk about what you're talking about with the cool regulations. You know, we need to make sure we're the world leader no matter what. We need to make sure we're working with those countries to make sure we can ship our products, which I think are the safest and best in the world, not only to the local store, but all over the world. So, you know, there needs to be some compromise there. And like you said, you're not always going to make everyone happy, especially in the agriculture sector, because there are a lot of competing interests there. So we want to make sure we're continuing to be the world leader, and whatever we need to do to make that happen is what we need to do.
Joe Don, a lot of our work on State House Blend when we were focusing on the Kansas side mm-hmm. was during that legislative session that we all know
right.
went well past
right.
its deadline and focused mostly on Republicans who have mm-hmm. supermajorities in both sides of the legislature in Kansas, not sort of being able to come together and get a budget the governor and the House and the Senate could all agree on. Missouri has some similarities, supermajorities of Republicans in both the House and the Senate, a Democratic governor, but the budget did not take several extra weeks to pass in Jefferson City. Why do you think it's different, or is it so different, I guess, is a question.
You know, I don't keep up on Kansas politics probably like I should, but since my time in the House, I think probably what has helped us is we've had good leadership at the top. Who has, you know, guided us as we've gone, especially in the budget process. But I think government is set up to be slow and you know, kind of it takes some time to work through those issues. So we've had good leadership. I think our budget is in a lot better shape than what Kansas budget is.
And the leadership you're talking about is your legislative leadership in the House.
Right, exactly. I mean, you know, if I look at Rick Stream, who's budget chairman, when I first came in, and now Tom Flanagan and the people who are on the budget staff, I mean, I think the budget process, my experience has been it's gone really smoothly.
Is there cooperation between Republicans and Democrats in your perception?
I think probably the budget is probably one of the better places to look as far as cooperation, you know, bipartisanship. But I think overall, Republicans don't have all of our ideas aren't all the best ideas. And we have bad ideas, too. I mean, I go to Jefferson City to promote the good ideas, what I think, and to vote down the bad ideas. Democrats can have good ideas. And I look forward to working with them on what helps them with their districts and what helps the state in general. So I see a lot of bipartisanship in Jefferson City. And you know, that's probably not what gets reported on all the time. And a lot of it's done in committees, and it's done late at night working on, like I talked about, the school transfer issue. You know, there are a lot of senators. I can thank Senator Pierce and Representative Wood. You know, they worked countless hours with people all across the board on issues like that. So just something that people don't talk about but is really going on in Jefferson City.
So Arlie Hoskin, who's our citizen guest today, you used to live in Kansas. Now you live in Missouri. Why is that?
I did. I got a job in Kansas City last November and knew I was going to need to relocate from Lawrence. And after the election, when Sam Brownback was reelected, I just did not find the Kansas side as appealing, and I kind of predicted what I could predict what was going to happen in the legislature. So I made the decision to move to the Missouri side, and I've been very pleased in North Kansas City.
Have you been pleased with the way both Republicans and Democrats function in Missouri, at least in your observation?
Yeah, what I've been pleased the most with is I don't feel like the school districts are being and the school funding is being held hostage. So as a mother, that's, you know, that's something that guides my decisions.
When you hear that you've got Kansans moving to Missouri because of the Republican leadership in Kansas, and I don't know if Arlie is typical of that many people, but at least one person has done that. Does that affect how you think about your role as a leader or as a Republican leader in Missouri?
Yeah, I mean, and we'll welcome all the people who want to come to Missouri and support the economy in Missouri. I mean, I think that's great. And like I said, I don't want to look bad upon what Kansas is doing because I just don't keep track of it like I need to. We've got enough going on in Missouri. But, you know, I think people, they vote with their pocketbooks, and we're a mobile society. And if they feel like they can have a better life, you know, when they cross the state line, the more the merrier. But I do think that, and I speak for myself when I say this, you know, I have people email me every day, call me every day of all political parties and walks of life. And I think it's our duty to listen to their, you know, I can disagree with them, but I think we can have a civil discussion about what needs to happen. And, you know, I represent 36,000 people, and I feel like when I go to Jefferson City, a lot of issues I don't have any preset, you know, I'm going to vote this way. You know, if I have a lot of people call me about certain things, you know, I try to represent the people I represent. So it's good that, you know, people, if they feel like they're ostracized or, you know, they need to move somewhere where they feel that they're going to be better taken care of, then hopefully Missouri can offer that to them.
Great. Well, Joe Don McGaugh welcomes you, Arlie.
Yes.
Thank you.
Welcome to Missouri.
You know, last week on the podcast, we had Representative Judy Morgan, mm-hmm. One of your colleagues in the state house. She's but the opposite. She's
right.
She's in a safe Democratic seat here in Midtown Kansas City. Like her, you were unopposed in your last election.
Right.
No primary opponent, no general election opponent. I want to ask you the same thing I asked her. Does having an uncontested seat, in a very safe Republican seat, does that change how you govern? Does it change the way you operate in the legislature, the way you speak on the floor? Does it change the kinds of legislation you would sponsor? Does it free you to compromise or make you less likely to compromise?
Well, and I want to say Representative Morgan, I listened to when she was on, and I can say she's always very well studied when she is on the floor and she, you know, speaks for her people. I think the biggest difference is my district, I wouldn't exactly call it a safe district.
Okay.
It's more of a kind of a 50-50 toss-up district.
Okay. But still you had no opponent.
Right. With me being unopposed, you know, it probably goes back to what I said before about trying to represent the people I go to Jefferson City to represent. But being unopposed doesn't really change what I do. You know, for instance, right last year and this year, I try to make it to all my city council meetings and go to all the school board meetings, just to kind of get a finger on the pulse of what's going on. I think to be an elected representative, whether you're school board or, U.S. senator even, you know, you've got to go out there and talk to people, find out what they think about certain things. You can't go to Jefferson City and be a rogue and just feel like you can, you know, do what I want to do. That's probably some of the cultural issues that, you know, you asked me about. You know, we need to be responsive to the people we represent, and the only way to be responsive is to go out and talk to them. So
one of the things that we also talked about last week, and I know that you've been actually involved with in some of the legislation you've sponsored and tried to get through the legislature, is ethics rules,
right.
Ethics reform in the state. Nothing managed to get passed, even though there seems to be consensus, bipartisan consensus even, that there's a problem.
Right.
And yet nothing got through the legislature. Why is that?
You know, I think the easy answer last year was probably how the Senate, you know, got held up with what happened the last couple of weeks of session, because I think there was, like I said, there was a conference committee on the two ethics bills, the House version, the Senate version. I really think if but for the Senate shutting down, something probably would have happened. I know it's a priority next year for a lot of folks, and they'll continue to work on it. I think the biggest sticking issues are probably contribution limits and the revolving door, as we call it, for legislators going from legislator to lobbyist, which we've seen some of recently. You know, if we can get through those two issues, I think everybody's fine with limiting gifts from lobbyists and those type of things. So we just need to work out some of those issues, and I think we'll have something that people can be proud of, and we can be proud of as legislators.
And when you say it's a sticking issue, for example, the revolving door, and right. By that you're talking about that a legislator can resign from the legislature one day and be a professional lobbyist the next.
Correct.
Working in the legislature. Why is that a sticking issue? Are there some representatives who want to defend their freedom and right to do that?
I think it was more of a sticking issue on the Senate side, from my understanding.
Okay.
Last year, I think that they just said, we're either going to take that out of the bill, we're not going to pass it. I think is kind of what was said. I filed a bill last year that basically said employers in Missouri couldn't make their employees sign a covenant not to compete. I mean, I don't like the government telling an employer or an employee, you can't go out and get another job. I understand that. I understand that argument. But when I think about what I do on a daily basis in Jefferson City, I'm working with constituents, other legislators, lobbyists, the administration. I can't imagine having that inside knowledge and then all of a sudden saying, well, I'm done here. I'm going to go, get a paycheck from whatever special interest group. We at least need to have a limit of some short amount of time to say there's a cooling off period. Basically, not that these individuals can have a job as a lobbyist down the road, because they do have a lot of knowledge about the system and how it works, and that's important. But them going from legislator, they got elected one day, to lobbyist the next, just doesn't pass the smell test.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. Mike McGraw, you've done a lot of reporting on government accountability issues. I mean, how bad is it, relatively speaking, the Missouri ethics situation?
Well, I think the fact that we stand out nationally as the, if I'm right, the only state legislature that has no limits on campaign contributions, I just kind of wonder how long the guys down there want to stand out in that way nationally.
Sure.
I mean, if you think forward into the future, how soon can we really realistically deal with this problem?
So to answer your question, in 2006, when I worked on a state Senate campaign in Northeast Missouri, it was in the era of campaign contribution limits. And if we had a donor who wanted to donate, $100,000, they would just set up 100 PACs and political action committees or a bunch of people who would trickle down. There was absolutely zero transparency in where that money was coming from. When they basically passed unlimited campaign contributions, one of the theories was it's 100% transparent. Voters are going to know exactly when you get a $100,000 check, they know exactly who it's coming from. Now, that to me, that's a good thing. What's bad is that one person can finance your entire campaign with one check.
And it's been known to happen.
It's happened more than once. Mm-hmm. So, like any good piece of legislation in Jefferson City or Topeka or Washington, D.C., there needs to be a compromise that people can work with. I mean, do we need to have a limit so small that they continue to put together these hundreds of PACs and they just funnel the money down? No. Do we need to have something that's transparent? Yes. We strike the balance there. I think everybody can work with it. And I don't want to be the one state in the nation who is unlike everyone else. I mean, I understand the constitutional argument that's political money is political speech and that kind of thing, and I think Citizens United talks about that, but that doesn't mean we can't pull back the reins and say, let's have a level head about this, let's have something that's reasonable, that people can have transparency, and there's not this shell game going on.
So, Arlie, you listen to this as a citizen. You've moved to Missouri because you're expecting a higher standard of government, apparently, or at least governmental approaches that you agree with. Are you encouraged when you hear Jodan say those things, or are you skeptical?
Well, I think I always have a healthy skepticism towards any government. I would, as a citizen, like to see this reined in. I don't think that's something that any Missourian wants to be known for as, the state that has unlimited campaign contributions.
And what I think I hear you saying, Arlie, then is, well, show me, not mm-hmm. just don't just tell me, but show me.
Yeah.
Joe Don, do you see that getting done in the next session?
Like I said, I think with anything in Jefferson City, I mean, when people talk about ethics reform, as you can see, it's multiple issues. You know, it's going to be I have hope that there will be an ethics bill passed next year. I think there needs to be an ethics bill passed next year. But I can't tell you what is going to be involved with it.
All right. Well, Joe Don, we of course have one big question that we end with. But before we get to that, we're going to go around the table one more time and find out what's on the mind first of our citizen guest, Arlie Hoskin.
Well, another thing I just wanted to touch on real quickly is, do you think there is any chance that Medicaid expansion will happen next session?
Highly doubtful. We've had the conversation a lot. We've talked about it a lot. I just don't think there's, with a supermajority of the Republican Party in Jefferson City in the Senate and the House, I just, you know, there have been a handful of senators who said, you know, it's a non-starter. It will never get through the Senate while we're here. You know, if you look at the numbers right now in Missouri, we have 900,000 Missourians on Medicaid right now. Over the last 5 years, Medicaid spending has increased $1 billion. This last year, it increased by $170 million. So we understand the federal government. They've got this carrot out here saying you expand Medicaid, you put the 300,000 Missourians who don't have coverage on the system, we're going to pay for it for 3 years. If we put those 300,000, the argument is that the trajectory is already out of control. If we put 300,000 more Missourians on there, what's it going to do to our budget years down the road? And I was an intern in Jefferson City when they cut Medicaid, and I've seen those fights. So, you know, we're having the fight to add people on Medicaid now. I just don't see it happening in the current environment.
All right. And Mike McGraw, one more question or thought from you.
Well, Joe Don, I think you're involved in some fascinating issues, from gun issues to welfare issues,
right,
to two issues that I'm particularly interested in. One is the State Conservation Department, mm-hmm. and one is the future of the river. You and your colleagues have been asking questions about the State Conservation Department,
right,
which is in some minds of some citizens in Missouri, sacrosanct.
Right.
I sometimes think of it as the third rail in Missouri politics. Mm-hmm. You've been asking some questions about the large amount of money they have.
Right.
Where do you think that's going? Do they need an internal audit? Do we need to know more about how that state agency is spending the large amount of money it gets?
Yes. You know, I think anytime, we've said this on the House floor. I've said this on the House floor. I think the Conservation Department does a great job. I think that they're world class. They're the best in the country. No one argues that point. But whenever they have the amount of money that they have, and, you know, they need to be responsive to the citizens of the state of Missouri. And I think we need the opportunity to find out where the money's going, how they're spending the money. You know, any time a government entity such as the Conservation Department is out there working for the citizens, they have to be responsive. So I think we have the duty to dig into what's going on there. And I'm sure everything is fine. Everything, they've done everything up to snuff, but we need to make sure that's continuing to happen.
But are you getting pushback from people who say, don't even ask the question?
Sure. I mean, you always have pushback, you know, I think the people who have that pushback, if you had a conversation and sat down with them and talked to them about the issues, I think they would say, yeah, you need to, you know, lift the rug and find out what's going on.
Do you really think everything's fine, or do you have some suspicions that maybe there's some waste, something that you might want to raise questions about?
Yeah, I mean, I think any governmental program, entity, department, you're going to have some things that need to be, you know, cut and snipped and
do you have any suspicions about what that might be before, you know, offhand?
Well, we are actually having the Ag Committee, we're having a joint meeting this month on the mitigation tax credits that the Conservation Department, you know, they're currently basically selling these tax credits to companies who have to offset certain expenses. When they put up a building, when Walmart puts in a huge parking lot, you know, they have to buy these credits back. Basically, the Conservation Department is using state resources, we think, to do these type of things, and they're forcing small businesses out from being able to do this cost effectively. Issues like that we need to get to the bottom of. We want to promote businesses in the state of Missouri, not the Conservation Department using tax dollars to do this type of program.
All right. Well, we'll pay attention and see where that all goes. I want to thank our guest today, our citizen participant, Arlie Hoskin. Good to have you here, Arlie.
Thanks. Good to be here.
And the KCPT reporter, formerly of The Star, Mike McGraw, thank you for being here.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So one last question and an effort to get to know you, Joe Don McGaw. Thanks for being with us, by
You're
the way.
You're welcome.
Really
for
appreciate
having
it. And thanks for representing the 39th District. In an effort to get to know you, though, as
right.
I think you're aware, we're going to close the show with your favorite song. I hope you've given this some thought.
I have.
What is your favorite song?
So I actually asked my wife about this because I listened to Representative Morgan. I had to think pretty long and hard about it.
Yeah, we caught her off guard, I think.
Normally it's My Kids. I would say my favorite song. But I think what fits me is Lynyrd Skynyrd, Simple Man.
Ah.
So I thought that's...
That's very nice.
Pretty fitting for me.
And there's some knowing looks around the
right.
table. That's a good choice. Well,
right.
thanks so much for being with us. Statehouse Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can find us on iTunes or on kcur.org/statehouseblend. Are you on the Twitter? I'm trying to channel Sam Zeff when I say that. Are you on the Twitter? You can follow me. I'm at PTS Brian. We also try to use the hashtag Statehouse Blend, so look for us there. You can find us again in abbreviated form on Tuesday mornings at 11. Up to Date makes a little space for us, Tuesdays on KCUR. And finally, a special announcement. We really want you to come sit in our citizen chair that Arlie occupied so well today. Help us out in getting to know elected leaders in Kansas and Missouri. If there's something that you want to say or to ask, shoot me an email. I'm at brian@kcur.org. I'm Brian Ellison. See you next time.